Hello, and welcome to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. My name is Michael Stacia, and in this show, we are going to discuss what is part four of our series on encryption. In this particular part, we are going to discuss hashing and hashing functions and what those are. To learn more about me and my background, be sure to check out my GoGo profile. Let me also say, if you have any questions that you would like to ask me, please use the question and comment box below. With that being said, let's go ahead and get started. Now, in my previous radio shows in this series, we talked about, in part one, we talked about encryption and what that is, and cryptography. Part two, we talked about symmetric and what symmetric algorithms are. And we talked about how they use the same key to encrypt and decrypt. And then in part three, we talked about asymmetric, asymmetric encryption algorithms, public and private key. We talked about Diffie-Hellman key exchange and how the mechanics of that. So some good stuff we've covered so far. And I hope you, if you took the time to listen to those, that you really enjoyed what you encountered there. Well, what we're now moving forward now is we're going to the next step in encryption is something that is known as a hashing function or hashing. Hashing is a really surprising and unique part of cryptography for a lot of people because what we've talked about so far is really taking information and rendering it into a form that it makes it unusable by anyone except those individuals we want to decrypt that information. Fairly simple for that, to grasp that. Hashing functions or hashing doesn't do that. Hashing does not, in no way, shape, or form protects information from unauthorized disclosure. What it does is it goes through and protects information or protects the integrity of information, making sure that that data stays in a form that I intended it to. It does not provide confidentiality of information. That information must stay in a form that it is that I can trust it, that I have trust on what it's supposed to be. So that is what what hashing will do for you. Now, when you run hashing, hashing goes out and it is going to allow you to take a piece of information. You pick. You could go out there and say that book that's sitting on your desk. You could say that book is in digital form. You can go out there and say that it's a document in digital form. You can say it's the Library of Congress that's in digital form. I don't care what the information is. You take that information and you shove it through the meat grinder known as a hashing function. What happens? Well, if you run it through that meat grinder known as a hashing function, it's going to derive a fixed length value out of that, meaning that no matter what you put through it, that information will always be the exact same length. So it means that you still have the original message in that's completely readable, plain as day. But what you have sitting next to it is a hash of a fixed length. Now, that information you put in, again, whether it's a book, whether it's a document, whether it's the whole Library of Congress, that hashing value is going to be the exact same length. Whether it's 64-bit, 128-bit, it does not matter. It's going to be the exact same length. Now, that's unique. That's very important because if you get down to it and think about it, that hash, even though it's a fixed length, what does it give us? It doesn't give us confidentiality. Where does that integrity part come in? Well, what happens here is that if I was to go out there and take any one of those entities, those documents that I talked about, and I changed one single solitary thing, let's say the hash that came to all three of those things was 128-bit length. Each one of those hashing or those hashes is going to be unique, has to be unique. any piece of information you put in, if that information is unique, the hash should be completely unique. Now, when we get down to it, if I go through and have a fixed length value comes out, let's just say for kicks, let's take the Library of Congress. Let's say you took the whole Library of Congress of the U.S. and you put it through a hashing algorithm, like an MD5. You run it through there. Well, once you run it through there, what happens? It goes through that little meat grinder. It comes back out, and you get 128-bit length hash. Well, now I go out there and I erase. It's this whole thing's electronic format. I at random choose a period or a letter at some point in there and I erase it. And then I rehash it. That 128-bit hash that came out of it should change greater than 50%. You know, if not higher. We should see the hash changes. In fact, that hash, if it's really done well, you should maybe see one or two characters between the two hashes before and after matching. So that's the way that goes through and works. Now, you may ask yourself, okay, could I reverse that hash and get what you originally put in? Well, first of all, you wouldn't need to, because hashing isn't designed to protect confidentiality. That's the domain of something else. What we talked about in the previous two discussions. Well, it also goes through and is what they consider mathematically infeasible. You know, to reverse that, it's just impossible to do. You're not going to be able to do that, to reverse it. Now, when you go through and consider the fact that it's infeasible, let's also throw something else in there. You have to be able to go out there, and it's very important that given a piece of information, I should never be able to go out there and get another piece of information that results in the same hash. It means that if I write one letter to my mom and one letter to my girlfriend, and even though they're completely different people and completely different things inside of it, they should not generate the same hash. That's important. It cannot be anything else than that. If two messages generate the exact same hash, how do you verify which one is the one you're supposed to have? I can't, so I got a problem. So that is hashing. Now, where do we use hashing? Hashing just works with data. I don't care what that data is. It works with data. Hashing is used for digital signatures. It's used for message authentication codes. We get those. It goes through and is used to protect authentication or work with authentication systems. It's used for going out there doing checksums. If you've ever gone to a website and you've had a file on there that you download, and next to the file it says MD5 or checksum, and it has some gobbledygook next to it, you know, some alphanumeric string next to it, that's a hash. What's that company telling you? It's telling you MD5 and giving you a hash. It's telling you that if you download their file and you run the MD5 program against it, it will use the MD5 hashing algorithm against, and it will run, if you run it against that file, it should generate that same hash, because the company's saying, when we created this file and before we posted it, we ran MD5 against it, we got this value, so this is the version of the file that we created. So if you go through and you rehash that file, once you download it with the exact same stuff, because they're telling you MD5, that hash should be the same. If it matches, it means what? It means that it's the same. It's the exact same data. We meant it to be the same. So that's very, very important to have that. So that's what hashing will do for you. Hashing's used in a number of different areas. Now, when you get down to hashing, does have a lot of uses. But the one that we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about digital signatures, and we're going to go through and talk about that in another discussion, because we want to go through and talk about the mechanics of that. We're going to talk about how digital signatures are created, but I need you to understand hashing. Hashing comes in many different types. There's many different types of hashing algorithms out there. The ones that are the most interest to you that you're going to see is MD5, which, if you're feeling ambitious, if you feel like you want to do some extra credit, you can go out on the internet, go to Google, or your favorite search engine, down and Google MD5 and download the software. and create a text file. Go and open up Notepad in Windows or a text editor in your operating system. Type out that text file, save it, hash it, and you'll get a hash. Record that hash, then go out there and open up that same text file and delete one character. Change one character. I don't care what it is. Change one character. Save the text file again. Rehash it. And see if that and see what happens to the hash. You should see a tremendous change in there just by one character. And that's MD5. The other one you see out there is SHA-1. SHA-1 you'll see out there, and that is used for the same thing. It's used to hash messages, or used to as a hashing function. So if you take a look out there, you will see, you know, these type of things out there. There are other ones. There's ones like Panama as hashing functions, as Whirlpool, there's Haval. But more than likely, you're going to see MD5 or SHA-1. Undoubtedly, if you push and you make a deeper foray into the world of security, you're going to see digital messages that say SHA-1 or MD5. And what are they referring to? They're referring to hashing. They're telling whoever sent you that message is saying, this is the hash that we got. This is the algorithm we used to hash it. Do it yourself to know it came from us. So that's what hashing is going to do for you. It's very, very valuable as a technology. It can stand by itself, or it can be something that works in conjunction with other, technologies, as we're going to see. Hashing is used in other areas, such as, if we get down to it, it can be used for digital certificates. We're going to talk about that in another session. It can be used to, go out there, like I said, validate messages. It can be used to do IDSs. In the course, we talked about IDSs. We talked about host-based IDSs. Well, one of the things host-based IDSs is they are supposed to protect you and say that, if you have a system that is... If you have the system sitting out here, you are want to make sure that those files stay exactly the same. Those files do not change in any way, shape, or form. So what happens here is you want to make sure those files don't change in any way, shape, or form. How do you do that? You can't put permissions onto them. So what do? You go through and even if you put permissions on them, rather, there's no way of saying that the file didn't in some way get modified. So what happens here is you put permissions on a file, and you say, okay, you put permissions on the file, but I really want to make sure that file did not in any way, shape, or form change. So now what I do is I take that file and I hash it. I get a resulting hash, and I take that hash and store it someplace securely. At any point down the road, I can rehash that same file, and the hash has to match. If it does not, what does that mean? It means you've got a file that's changed. Simple as that. And the host-based IDS compares those hashes and says, oh, you got a problem. These files aren't the same. Or, oh, they're the same, so you're fine. It will tell you that specifically. So that's the value of hashes. That's what hashes will do. So expect to see those, and expect to see them a lot. In fact, we're going to be seeing them in other areas inside our field of security. So, and what we're going to do in our next discussion, in our next part, is we're going to discuss hybrid crypto systems, and that's going to include symmetric, asymmetric, digital signatures, and hashing. So let's go ahead and we'll take a look at that. We'll just go ahead and continue that discussion on in the next part of this series. So with that being said, I would like to just say thank you for joining me in today's session. I hope you enjoyed this presentation. I hope you got a lot out of it. If you have any questions or comments, please use the question and comment box, like I said previously. If you're interested in viewing any of my other shows, just search the GoGo Radio Archive for Michael Stacia, and my radio shows will come right up. If there is a show you would like me to do, please send me an email and let me know what that might be. So I'd like to thank you for your time today, and I'd like to remind you to tune in to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com.